Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police departments. Then the fourth floor that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned. And the yard, the grass, high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pulled up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together.
Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family gonna live in there? Is they gonna, I'm gonna get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
The goose that laid golden eggs. Once upon a time, there lived a farmer who owned a farm with many chickens and geese in it. He used to sell the eggs and earn his honest living. But Farmer's Goose never laid any eggs and ate a lot. Farmer didn't know what to do. One fine day, when he was collecting eggs, he saw the same goose had laid a golden egg.
A yellow egg? Oh my, a golden egg! I can get a good fortune for this one golden egg!
The farmer was more than happy to get a golden egg every day. He had sold many golden eggs and had become rich.
I am so fortunate that I have got a goose that lays a golden egg every single day.
Farmer had bought a huge mansion for himself, which was full of luxuries and comfort. But soon the farmer became greedy and began to dream about becoming the richest man in the world.
Now I have all the luxuries. I need to live a comfortable and happy life. But a single golden egg every day won't make me a rich man soon.
Farmer's greed knew no bounds. As he wanted to become a rich man soon, he had decided to fetch all the golden eggs from the goose as soon as possible. He finally was fast asleep, dreaming of becoming a rich man. Next morning, as soon as he woke up, he went to the goose's pen.
Finally, today I'll get plenty of golden eggs.
Without thinking of the consequences, greedy farmer harmed the goose and was left empty-handed.
Oh no! There is not a single golden egg in her stomach. What have I done? I harmed the one who gave me a golden egg every day and have made me so rich.
Farmer lost his favorite goose because of his greediness and stupid decision. It is truly said, too much greed always leads to some sort of downfall and great loss.
All right. After the, man, I feel I got to get back to some very, very fundamentals. The goose that laid the golden egg, because I believe there's quite a few people out there that they haven't gotten this lesson early in life, so they need to hear it. Now, I just played the kiddies version of it. But I'll give an example. Paying off a house. I just got off of a phone conversation with somebody about 25 minutes or so ago. And he said something at least profound to me, that paying off a house is a skill. And it's a skill set that most people don't have. Now, I'm talking about having a skill set where you have a house mortgage or whatever. It could be $50,000 left on it, $100,000 left on it, maybe even $1 million left on it. But the skill is having the ability to pay it. It takes a skill to do that. It's a skill set. It's a learned skill set. And let me even the playing field out. When we were all born, everybody was born. None of us humans, we had to learn everything from scratch, from ground zero. We had to learn how to walk. We had to learn how to talk, run, write, read. Do everything that we know, no matter what age you are right now, when we were all born, the common denominator was none of us knew how to do shit, except shit. That's it. That's it. So everything that we've learned, no matter what age you are, man, you might be 12 months old, you might be, of course, 12 months, you might be not listening to this podcast right now, but if you're 12 years old, 5 months, 6 months, 100 years old, 101 years old, 105 years old, and all ages in between, when we were all born, none of us learned how to learn. We didn't know nothing. Everything we do or can do, we had to learn how to do it. And we learn through observation, trial and error, and people teaching us, and, of course, a combination of all those. So paying off of a house is a learned skill. It's an acquired skill. Only thing is, most people, you know, like, what's the common denominator with a lot of homeless people? Not all, but obviously 90, 95% or better, they don't know how to pay off a house. Now, of course, some people become homeless because of fire damage or this, that, or other. Because there are many ways to become homeless. But two things, they don't know how to build a house. They haven't learned, a lot of them have not learned that skill. That's the skill set, learn how to build a house. Another skill set is, because if you learn how to build a house, you can build another house. The other skill set is paying off of a house. Now, let's say you don't have the skill set of knowing how to build a house, but you have other skills that you can gather the resources so you can pay off of a house no matter what the size of a mortgage is instantaneously or within a day or so. Learn skills. So to help people with that, just like when we were talking about Mignon Francois yesterday and last week, Mignon's acquired skill was, number one, she had to learn how to make a cupcake because she didn't know how to make a cupcake. And next thing is she had to learn how to develop that skill into a cupcake business, which we know today is the Cupcake Collection. And through those golden egg skills, okay, she was able to prevent the foreclosure from her house, get the mortgage payments caught up, and then that house is now a home and a business. Those are all learned skills, what I call golden, golden goose skills. Those are all golden goose skills that can help you lay golden eggs and as many golden eggs as you wish. The farmer in the fable, the goose that killed the golden egg, he had one goose that was laying golden eggs, one on a consistent daily basis. He killed his goose, the only one that he had, because he wanted more. Now, what he should have done is learn how to breed more geese that can lay golden eggs to his heart's content. So that's one of the things that we'll be doing here on It's My House. Now, I just opened up or started a new Clubhouse group called Golden Goose Skills. Golden Goose Skills. Now, along with, we have another group with Reba called Couples Building Wealth. So those are two rooms that you can go to and get skills to produce golden eggs. All right? And because there's different ways to go about doing this. All right? If you're a couple, you don't have to be a romantic couple, but Couples Building Wealth, that's one room that you go to on Clubhouse and learn how to develop or how to acquire the golden goose skills that you need for whatever you might need. And, of course, Golden Goose Skills. And we have a meeting a Clubhouse meeting tonight at 7 p.m. So, anyway, let's go to the phone lines because we have Reba. I believe Reba's on. Good morning, Reba.
Grand rising, Brother L.A. How are you?
I can't complain. It's smoldering hot down here. But, hey, I got my motor skills. So I can get around. I can jump in the shower and cool off.
Yeah, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. So my sentiments exactly. We got Mama Evelyn, who was on yesterday. Today we want to hear from Quan, who is a film producer. He certainly wants to chime in regarding generational wealth building, asset building, and golden egg, because he's taken several resources that he has under his belt and making them work. We actually just discussed using a grand ballroom for low-budget reality TV production. So, Quan, if you are listening in, press star 1 to unmute your microphone, and the host, Brother L.A., will see.
Oh, he's got to call in. He hasn't called in yet.
That you are there. You'll see when they call in anyway, even if they're not.
Most of the time
in the
you
queue.
See it. I don't
yeah,
see
even
him
if they're
in
the queue. Okay.
Queue.
Okay. Yeah, because I did
just,
text you, the
link. Just give him the 619 number.
Right. Okay. So now the but the host queue, when they go into the host queue, it just lets you know if they want to speak. Okay. Gotcha.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mama Nicole texted me this morning. So, nevertheless, I was having a conversation with my eldest son, and he's concerned about my consistency. And who wants to hear the complaining about what could, woulda, shoulda, you know, just do it. So that's, I think, we're getting to a point where my sons are all adults, for the listeners, who ages 21 and up. So it's not that I don't have any accountability, but my tolerance for, I would say, cheap talk, you know, like, you know, we want to get some things done this summer. My eldest son, who should be listening in, as far as I'm concerned, don't question why I do something unless you actually check it out. You see what it is, and then you still have questions, at least, because, you know, you may figure it out in the interim. Why do I listen to podcasts? Why do I do the shows? Why do I watch documentaries? Well, I've watched documentaries with them. It's information. You know, all bits of information you may not necessarily be able to use, but it's still information. Thank God you can process. So it's called intellect. Using your intellectual ability to process. That's what intellect is, the ability to process information. So whether you think it's useful for now or not, it's still just information. So I do agree with redirecting energy toward getting certain things done moving forward. So my mother used to tell me, my late mother used to tell me, oh, you from Missouri, you from the show me state, you know, because I was pretty stubborn, like my eldest son, by the way. And I thought, you know, Scott Free, they say, you know, you're going to have children, you're going to go through the same thing. I thought because I don't have any daughters that I wouldn't have to deal with the attitude and this and the other. And I thought I was a good girl, which I could still say I probably was, but just that naivety had me to be so stubborn because it was like I felt like I could think for myself. And I was kind of nurtured in a certain way by my aunt. And then my mom had, her way was like, do what I say, not as I do, which that, you know, I feel like we follow the example of the elders, right? So do what I say, not as I do. That's, and she explained ultimately that she just didn't necessarily want us, particularly me, because I was always up under my mom. she couldn't even have, she didn't have room to breathe sometimes. I would give her an elbow up. Because I would watch her, and I was using a mirror one morning, putting on her makeup. And she says, what are you doing? I said, I'm watching you. She said, don't watch me. I said, you're beautiful. And I said, you know, and so she was watching. She knew that I was watching her. She just, I guess, okay, putting on makeup, it was something more spiritual to that. So from that aspect of a mother-daughter relationship to what I'm dealing with my son, he's not watching me in the mirror, but he's watching me. Because my mom, she was getting prepared for something, for work, whatever she was getting ready to do for the day, and she was going to go about her business. But there were certain things I ultimately figured out, and my mom, she ultimately shared that certain things that she didn't want, certain of her ways she didn't want us to follow in. For myself, I'm still learning and growing, collecting information and processing information. So at this point, I realize, even with my older son, not that I'm obligated, well, I don't want to say, I don't want to confuse the listeners as far as my heart is concerned, but I'm tired of scorching hot out here in Chicago. And like I said, my tolerance is on a certain level. So trying to lead, you know, it's almost like Myron Golden said, like, okay, so when my son has an idea, he wants to do some vending, basically street vending. These are things that they've done when they were younger, you know, making money. I had them selling snow cones and candy bars and things like that. So now he wants to make these moves. So today it's the blame game. He didn't want to hear the audio regarding the man who saw the 9 friends build, rehab that house to live in it. He don't want to hear that. He's like, yeah, I don't want to hear that. Why do you do, you know? So the thing is, once again, it's back to the fact that it's information. I did the same thing with my sons. I took him in particular, paid him $50, and now we were going to be out there for like 3 hours, 2-3 hours. That's still $100, $150. And you're my child. This is Chi-Town, y'all, so excuse my background noise. So we're at my dad's building, and I was paying people to gut it out. I wanted him to supervise, make sure that they did not stop moving because we needed to get that, because that was a place we could have lived in. And so I looked around, and I'm like, wait a minute. I said, what are they doing? I said, and don't let them take tools. So they were still, my dad had, oh, my gosh, he had thousands and thousands of dollars of tools. He was a three-area tradesman. So I said, I didn't have a problem because he had so many tools, so many duplicates. So he had like 10 different types of wrenches and 10 of the same types of wrenches and things like that, different kinds of things. So I was like, I didn't mind them using, you know, taking something. But I said, set them to the side. Well, if you're setting them to the side on the truck or putting them in a car where you're going to leave, that's not helping me gut out. That's taking what you want. You can get stuff out of there, fine. But he was a teenager. I think he was maybe 19. But keep in mind, that's called doing something. Now, if you have a better suggestion, then it's okay. I've always been open to suggestion, you know, relating back to my mom, who was like, look, really don't question me. Just do what I say. But my aunt, on the other hand, you know, we would have conversations, you know, so she was trying to, you know, just get in our head and say, why are you thinking like this? Where you are, because, you know, children, sometimes people just do stuff to be doing it, but it's like with my mom, I'll say, she said, why you do it? Because I wanted to. And it wasn't trying to be sarcastic, but I couldn't think of any, no, I wanted to. I was, maybe if I had known that, I would say I was curious. A better excuse for doing something that I wanted to do, but, and then I was trying to be honest, too, so you know, I got the beat down. I got my butt kicked a lot of times. And wouldn't cry at times. I wouldn't cry. As I got older, I got more and more stubborn. Yeah, that's another story. But, yeah, my eldest son, I said, you know, you're supposed to be paying attention to what I'm doing. We work together as a family. It's called being a team player. You may not necessarily know exactly what I'm doing or why, but if you check it out, then maybe you'll figure it out. Or maybe you have a suggestion. Don't just say, oh, no, I'm not with that. So I'm not trying to be on a soapbox and complain, but it's just the fact that this generational divide, talking about building generational wealth, I'm really at the point where I'm saying, look, I don't necessarily need you to build wealth, but I'd like for you to be a part of this process because you're going to earn your inheritance. You know what I'm saying? I've lost several properties, and I can't blame my children. They're children. But moving forward, you're an adult, and I'm not obligated to take care of you, but I do feel that I'm obligated to make sure that they get on their feet. And then I'm on, because there are some mistakes that I've made.
You just said, you just said something very important. Earn your inheritance.
Yeah.
But I'll take it one step further. They can earn their inheritance by building their inheritance.
Well, that's the point. That's the point. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's part of earning your inheritance. So that's the only way to earn your inheritance, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
You know, wealthy folk, they get an attitude with their children. They're upset with something that was done, and they just cut them off. Well, I don't feel that those children, a lot of those wealthy families, and I'm just not just talking about white folk because my family was wealthy as well. We had our own little store. We did some things in the house. It was odd, and we got an allowance. We got past that. I was rich. And my uncle who worked for CTA had us to iron his uniform. Prior to that was my granddad who worked for the post office. We got paid. My uncle paid very well. I remember my granddad paid, but that was money back in the day. $2 a pair?
Mm-hmm.
That was big money. And so I also did hair. And so we weren't like braiding hair, family hair, $10 here and there. But we were taught a certain way. My mom, it was my oldest son, reflecting on how she was with him. He would be told to do things just the way that I was reared up, my siblings. You get certain things done. You don't just get a stipend for help cleaning a house where you live. No. You have chores. But you get your stipend because you're going above and beyond. This is not stipend. You get an allowance because you're, first of all, you're not complaining. You're doing what you're told to do. You get an allowance because you're not causing me any extra problems. That's the way I would put it. You know, Well, I'm not just here by myself. If you are in this house and you, even if you just stay at home, you're going to have to freshen up sometime. It's like I got one particular situation where an individual feels like, oh, I don't use this. I don't use that. Yeah, but you use the toilet. So you can clean the whole bathroom if you just use the toilet. You don't use the sink. Honestly, I've seen where a person doesn't even want to wash. They don't want to be obligated to wash. That's mental. Imagine that. But one thing that I mentioned to my son earlier, it's hard to function around everything. And my late mother was a nurse, so I may be a bit of a germ freak. I'm allergic to dust mites, so any kind of things like to bite me. So dust, I'm going to probably have a little rash. Times like this, I take maybe 2 or 3 showers a day. Maybe I have a little OCD. I'm better, though. But the thing is, I have sensitive skin. I have eczema and all that kind of stuff. But I shouldn't be the only one cleaning up around grown folk. And then as an adult in, you know, my dwelling, who is not my child, but then even this morning I'm thinking like, okay, elder, you know, okay, am I just going to just consider, like, maybe as if I was taking care of my father, because, you know, people move around, they function, but it's just to the point where you're tired of cleaning up behind other folk. We got other things to do. We're supposed to be taking that extra time to be building my shed in the back of the building. My solar shed, you know. It's, you playing video games. I mean, playing video. So, it's really just one. Sometimes you have to get away and regroup. That's where I am. I just need to regroup. Because everything, and this is what I was trying to convey to my son, Brother L.A., everything is at our fingertips. We have no excuse. Got the van is running. Yes, we can go out there and sell some stuff. And today is a good day. It's super hot. I told my son, I said, I'd even spend cash on, you know, because, you know, we don't want to run up credit cards and so forth. Do the cash, make the money. At times, you know, you use your credit card and then you pay on it from the money that you produce. But at this point, leave that for the bills. Make sure the bills are taken care of. And just go out here and make this money. However, I don't even know how it's going to go. Well, I do. I'm just my tolerance level. I don't want to make it look bad for the young people, for the families whose young people are going to be working with me. But this is my own stubborn son. People think that everything is supposed to be, oh, do your children speak Spanish? Do they participate in your programs? Well, they did when they were younger. They're adults now. So they seem to want to participate, and that's great. But I'm saying let's talk more action. That was my message to my older son. Let's talk more action. We could go and do that, but we could probably just do a couple hours because still I want to get started on my project. So I may just do a schedule. Matter of fact, I'm going to post a schedule. Post a schedule. If anyone falls out of that schedule, that ain't on me. And I would say maybe for a whole week. Today is Tuesday. So for the rest of the week, the schedule, things that we said that we wanted to do together as a family, as a team, because I was even offered, my same son offered to take me to the show. Today is Tuesday, so here in Chicago, we have matinee day, and, you know, we can go and relax. We got some things to do. So we're going to go and get the wholesale stuff first, even if I go myself. Because I'm not saying, when you say you're going to do something, a lot of times you can just make some moves. You don't have to have people go with you or watch you, first of all, you know. Kind of seems I think I've given my son too much leeway. Communication is key because, mind you, I just shared that I was reaffirmed that I could communicate and speak my heart, speak my mind. My mother, she just had a different style of rearing, you know, because she knew that her way worked. My aunt, she's wealthy, but she didn't leave any wealth for us. I mean, she instilled some things in us to help us become wealthy, but she was the main one who had to sell our golden egg. She spearheaded my sons into using the attorney that helped to sell my grandmother's house, and they wanted to sell my mother's house. I got my mother's house. So, no, I mean, my mother, on the other hand, she wasn't trying to have all these conversations. She was on a mission, and I get it now. And I just needed the attention, needed to be talked to. I've always been petite. You say, your mouth, you know, your mouth make up for your size. Okay, I get it now. That's true. Like a little Stephanie Mills. I've always been a singer. Stephanie Mills and Anita Baker. More like Stephanie Mills. That's who I think of myself. I remind that's kind of who I admired growing up, but I kind of see that, you know. It was a song out called Mama, I Wanna Sing. It was a play, I think, at one point. Mama, I Wanna Sing. And, yeah, it was a play, Mama, I Wanna Sing. And why the little cage bird sings, you know, you got some people that are free spirits. you know, you got to move around. Now, also with sharing, Brother L.A., delegation. You got to start delegating. So my son said, my same son, he said, because I have three sons. He's 27. I'm 20. Actually, today he's 25. I have him call in. Happy birthday, DJ. Nevertheless, I also have a 21-year-old. Now, he's the cement mason, you know. But I'm like, where did the motivation go with my son? Like, it seems like we need to just redirect our energy and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. I say need. You know, I'm the mother, so I got to, would say, get some, excuse the term, get some balls about myself, put some hair on my chest. Say, this is what we're going to do. Because my project should have been done in May, right? And now it's June. It's super hot today. It's hard to think straight. But I do have some other people that God has put in my circle. For one, for you, some of my sons know your name. They've never met you in person, but they know that we disseminate a lot of information and that we're going to follow your lead on building the solar mobile home. So we'll see. Let me see if I guess I'll text Brother Quan.
Okay, well.
Yeah, I was just on the phone with him this morning.
While you're checking on that, let's take a quick break, a 2-minute break, and we'll be right back.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
All right, my board's sticking here. We're going to the phone lines in about 2 minutes.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do. And,
but we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses that could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
I got to take myself off mute and all this other stuff. Anyway, today we're going back to Aesop's Fables because I think a lot of people miss that fable, Aesop's Fable. I caught it through Rocky and Bullwinkle, through cartoons, Aesop's Fables. And let me just run through it again for those who don't know, who haven't heard the fable of the goose that laid the golden egg. There once was a farmer. And he had a goose, and he discovered that matter of fact, he was a poor farmer at first. And he came across a goose, and this goose laid a golden egg, just one golden egg one day. Now, by that goose laying that golden egg, that allowed that farmer to get back. He cleared, that one golden egg allowed him to clear off his, you know, get his all his back taxes paid, got his child support caught up, you know, and have some savings just from one a day, you know, from that golden goose. So the farmer was thinking to himself, you know what? If this goose laid more than one, if I can get more than one golden egg out of this goose a day, I'd become rich. Now, mind you, he was already doing well. I mean, he was debt-free just from the one egg a day. So what he decided to do is he decided to kill the goose, cut it open, and get a whole bunch of golden eggs all at one time. Well, he killed them. He looked inside the goose after he gutted them. He didn't see not one egg. So essentially, and then soon after that, you know, his expenses kept on going. Inflation set in. You know, his wife had developed a new consumption habit because she liked the nicer things in life. And then he had kids, and, you know, that's expensive. Then he fell behind on his child support, had to declare bankruptcy, and basically he lost his home, he lost the farm, and he was ass out. The moral of the story is, if you don't know already, don't kill the goose that lays the golden egg. Now, how in the F can we apply that to my situation, or whoever situation you're dealing with in 2022? All right, I'm behind on my rent, mortgage payments, back taxes, child support, the car needs to get fixed. How can this fable help me out? Glad you asked. Now, I'm going to repeat this story because this is a modern-day, in real-time, golden goose story. Now, I mentioned it earlier in this podcast. We did a whole podcast on it yesterday, and we mentioned it last week. And I'm working on getting this lady on the show. Once again, Mignon, spelled M-I-G-N-O-N, Francois. Black woman with seven children and a husband. So we're talking about seven plus two adults living in two rooms in a house. That's it. The water got shut off and the electric got shut off on the exact same day. Mind you, seven children, and one of those seven children was a baby. And, you know, you got these other six kids, and no water, no electricity. So they managed, I guess, through friends to get some fresh water in daily to bathe with. And I imagine you got all these people that got to bathe. They would bathe the baby first because the baby was the cleanest. And she's got videos on YouTube, so you can hear this directly from her, Mignon Francois. So the house is going to go to foreclosure. So how does she get out of this, man? This is one of these Batman situations. But she didn't have a utility belt until she talked to her grandmother. So her grandmother gave her a recipe by phone because Grandma didn't have anything written down. Grandma was giving the recipe for cupcakes. You know, take a pinch of this, take a handful of this, take, you know, a teaspoon of that or whatever. That's how Grandma gave it to her, dictated the recipe on how to make cupcakes because Mignon, with the seven kids, believe it or not, didn't know how to make a cupcake. So she made she got the cupcake recipe, but two of her daughters knew how to make, you know, how to take their recipe and turn it into a cupcake. Anyway, she had $5 left. I'm really butchering this story, but she had whipped up a batch of cupcakes for her daughters, okay, and they were passing them out from time to time throughout the neighborhood. One day the door knocks, and she answers the door. It's a realtor, one of the realtors who have been selling houses in the block. The realtor says, why are you lights out? She said, oh, I'm meditating. Okay. That's why the lights out. So in any event, she says, look, you know those cupcakes you've been, you know, passing out around the neighborhood here and there? You know, I got an open house coming up. Could you whip up 60 of them for me? I'll pay you $1 a cupcake. Mignon only had $5, so she said, when I get the cupcakes, I'll pay the $60. So Mignon, she didn't have no upfront money, all right? All she had was $5, and she's got to feed the family on that $5 later on that day. She took the $5, went to, I don't know, maybe the Family Dollar store or whatever, took the $5, bought the ingredients for the cupcakes, came back. She had a generator. She had a generator in some kind of way, and maybe a propane oven or whatever, and she baked the cupcakes, called the realtor, said, come back, I got them ready. They're right out of the oven. By the time you get here, they're going to be perfect. So she opened up the door, the realtor got there. It was all smelling good, fresh cupcakes. She took the fresh cupcakes, you know, because when you do an open house and you got freshly baked cookies or cupcakes or freshly baked bread, I mean, it really adds to the ambiance of the house. So she got $60 that day. took $5 out so she was able to feed the family that day. Let's say she did this on a Monday. By Friday, she had turned that $60 into $600. Fast forward a little bit further, she made enough money. Now, let me, before I go further, the cupcake recipe, all right, the cupcake recipe that her mother gave her was her goose. The cupcakes were her gold eggs. And she kept on doing that. She was able to make enough money to catch up the arrearages on her house and save it for foreclosure. Now she and those seven kids, and Larry Herno, her husband, later got divorced, but they were together when they started that business. They developed a family business, which is the goose that helped lay those golden eggs to save the house. Now she's got geese. She's got one location in Nashville, Tennessee, and she has the other location in New Orleans, Louisiana. So she's got two geese that lay golden eggs. Her geese is called, you can look it up online yourself right now, the Cupcake Collection. She's got a rack of videos on YouTube. Fascinating story. Now, I'm bringing this up, and the reason why I had to go fundamental today, nursery school today, the goose that laid the golden eggs, because I've been hearing it over every day. Black folks selling their house. Some are for sales. Somebody got a reverse. When you get a reverse mortgage on the house, people, it's like attempted murder. And for some people, it is murder because you'll lose the ancestral house with one of those things. Or somebody can't pay the taxes. So and this is why I talk about the chess game board. We've got to have more than two moves. The ancestral house. All right. But you've got to have more than a move of selling the house. That's typically the only move that I've been at. And I've been hearing this a lot from a lot of black families in the last month or so, really. But practically every day. So I was talking to a friend this morning, and he made a very, very accurate point. Paying off a house is a skill. It's a skill. Just like carpentry, being an electrician, being an auto mechanic, paying off of any big ticket item is a skill. What kind of skills do you have to like if you want to be a carpenter? Okay, two of the skills that you're going to have to develop are cutting and fastening. Fundamentally, that's carpentry, cutting and fastening. You have to learn those two skills. Then you need to have the right tools to do that. You know, what type of, you know what, financial literacy, I brought in the definition of financial literacy because they're financial literacy power tools. Now, in the case of Mignon Francois, okay, the recipe was a financial literacy instruction. Here the instructions from Grandma to get your ass out of hock. Grandma didn't put it that way, but that's the way I translate it. Now, the financial literacy power tools that Francois needed, oven, the cupcake trays, whatever you call them, you know, and whatever she got from the dollar store or the grocery store or wherever to make those cupcakes, you know, the right temperature to set it at, how long to bake it, you know, the icing, how do you make that? These are all financial literacy tools. And you got to put them together, and you got to develop those skill sets to make it. And that's how she was able to take literally nothing and turn it into something. Something. I would call this the MacGyver of cupcakes. But and it's something that anybody can do. But you got to develop the skills. Once again, everybody listening to this podcast, whoever will listen to this podcast, all of us, the common denominator that we all had, and this is why I don't buy into the idea of white supremacy, all born not knowing how to do anything but shit on ourselves. That's it. We had to learn how to eat. We had to learn how to crawl. We had to learn how to walk. We had to learn how to run. We had to learn how to speak. I mean, just the walking process. How many times did we, this is all of us, including me, how many times did we fall down and bust our lip, fall down and scrape our lip? How many times did we have to do that, called trial and error, to learn how to take one step? So we had to learn a whole bunch of skills, and we're constantly learning how to, you know, learn how to do these skills. So paying off a house, paying off a big tax bill is an acquired skill. Like I said yesterday, a lot of times when people have a problem, they might go to a lawyer. Now, Francois didn't have a legal problem. Because when you bring up the word foreclosure, which is a legal term, no, Francois didn't have a legal problem. She had a math problem. And those, remember those word problems that we used to get in, you know, grade school or whatever? You know, if Johnny had five apples, ate two apples, gave one away, you know. No, no. Here was Francois's math problem. What do I have to do? How many cupcakes? Let's line it up. I have $5. What must Francois do with $5 to turn it into $50,000 so she can pay up the arrearages on her home to avoid foreclosure? She had a math problem. The problem that most of us do, we take the math problem and go to a legal professional, and lawyers and attorneys don't know bupkis about math problems. That's why I had to take this thing fundamental, the goose that laid the golden egg. Stop killing the goose. Whatever your goose might be, a goose is an income-producing asset or an asset that has the potential to produce revenue. Right now in my driveway, I rent my carport. I got two carports. I rent one of them out. Takes care of me, the dog, and some other stuff. The lights, phone bill. Just off a carport. Just off of a carport. That's one of my golden eggs. Everybody's got a golden egg. At least one. I mean, excuse me. Everybody, let me go. No, no, forget about the egg for a minute. Everybody has got a goose that can lay golden eggs. Everybody. You're not going to get it from the government. Reparations is not a good. Reparations, no. And for people that want good reparations and all that, fine. Okay, I'm not knocking you for wanting that. But that's not your goose that will lay your golden eggs. Everybody has got a goose, at least one, that will lay golden eggs. I'll refer to the Mignon Francois story so much because it came from a conversation from her grandmother. That recipe, who would think that recipe was the goose that will lay golden eggs? We have a clubhouse meeting tonight. Our club on Clubhouse We got two of them. The first one is called, which Reba LaMaestra, we ran it, and we're running it again this week too. Couples Building Wealth, and check Clubhouse for when Reba schedules that. I'll be there too. And then we have another one that I formed this morning out of frustration with hearing. I just kept on hearing. I'm tired of hearing people that are selling six-figure homes, and within a matter of months, and that's their golden goose. That's the family's golden goose. In a matter of months, that whatever, $100,000, $200,000, $500,000, it'll be exhausted. So if you have a family member that needs to start over with, there's no more ancestral home to go to. But anyway, we have a Clubhouse meeting tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and the room is called Golden Goose Skills. Golden Goose Skills, and that room is about teaching people how to recognize the goose that laid the golden egg in their life, and how to turn it into an income-producing asset. That's on Clubhouse tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And like I said, we have another room, which Reba and I are partners on, called Couples Building Wealth. Because, see, every couple, that's two people. If you got two people, you got a gaggle of geese already. You got two. Matter of fact, well, anyway. So anyway, let me get off my soapbox here. Wait a minute. Let me. And my boy's acting funny here. Okay, wait a minute. Mine of its own. All right, 773, Reba. You there, Reba? Okay, she's somewhere. All right, let's go to the next one.
Yes, I'm here. I'll leave.
Oh, okay, Reba.
Yes, I'm here. Yeah, just be a little patient. I don't want you to have dead air on the podcast, but yeah, I'm here. I just had to unmute. So,
okay,
Quantrack, did you acknowledge him, that you told him you knew he was on the call? I don't know if he's still there. He's still there.
Okay, yeah. Let me open up his mic real quick. 217 area code.
217.
Yeah, your mic is open.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know. All right.
No, I just opened it. You know, any comment?
On everything that y'all discussed today. There was a lot of informative information. Just to touch on some of the things that I heard earlier, I actually heard some things that I did not know. But I always wonder, as a younger male in this generation, just like where the disconnection really came in at and where the confusion, you know, became in at, because a lot of what that man was saying, like a lot of people can build and a lot of us don't have those skills that we used to have. Obviously if you look at what's going on, the Mexicans kind of really took that over. We really don't even understand how to do that. But like thinking back on it, like my dad, he can do all of that. Like he knows plumbing, carpentry, electric, you know, like lights and all that. Like I've seen him do all of that. I just don't know. I only learned a little bit of it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I'll be really kind of thinking about that too sometimes, kind of like where was the disconnection? It was like he taught me some of it, but I was uninterested in a lot of it. You know what I'm saying? Like I think
right.
I took it for granted as a child. I didn't really value what he was trying to show me as a child. You get what I'm saying? And sometimes I'll be
yep.
thinking back on that too, like why didn't we pay attention as much when we were kids? Because it wasn't like it wasn't around us. You know? it was always there, but I just think we just didn't value it at the time. I don't think we even understood what was really going on, like how we understand it today, you know, like the game of things and how the world really works and how money really works and just how you really create generational wealth. You know what I mean?
Right.
I will say, like, the internet has helped a lot, especially with myself, like having to self-educate myself on a lot of those things because, a lot of the people that was around me wasn't familiar with a lot of the things that I was walking into. So they couldn't really give me advice. So I was like, you know, some of those things you have to learn the hard way and just figure it out alone as you go. But I always question that too, like, why didn't more people know about this or know about these different things that you can do to create income and generate income? Especially with just how open all these markets is in today's time.
Yeah, I agree.
I just feel like it's a million ways to make money. It's just what lane you really want to go in or how you want to apply yourself for what you're passionate about. But it's a million ways to make money once I've figured out money.
mm-hmm.
But before that,
and I'll just share
before
you came on, Brother Quan, that first of all, how old are you?
I'm 33.
In your 20s or 33? Okay.
I'm 33, yeah.
Okay. So you're just the generation above my son.
I'm in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I
kind
of feel like I'm in the middle of that old school because it was like it was still structured when I was coming up, and then all of that like switched at some point. So it was like I was still in that. You know, when I got in trouble by everybody. You know, my mama called, cousin, you know, I'm in trouble by every auntie, everybody. You know, when we get in trouble, we in trouble. So all of that type of stuff has changed, you know. And
now,
it's
I will
like
say the generation right beneath you, my son, well, my oldest son mm-hmm. is just a few years younger than you. He's 5 years your junior. I sometimes feel like it's hard. It's like I'm like, slow down. Let me show you something. Slow down. Let me see, you know. So as far as the generational divide, how can – everything is so fast nowadays, information.
Yeah.
So I find myself saying, sit down, listen to this, wisdom. But I think maybe I'm going to change my language. My son, my oldest son, his tolerance level.
I
homeschool my children for a minute. So keep in mind, I'm the daughter
the
of
even the world anything that we do makes
let
us
me, let me
accessible
say this.
To
let me
that.
Say this. I was reared in the way that your parents were reared, and so
mm-hmm.
on GP, I would say that there is no excuse for your father not showing you those skills. But I don't know the situation. However.
Mm-hmm.
I asked my dad, who was a three-area tradesman, I said, Dad, I want to, because my dad let my sister and I tuck point. He was like, a penny a second. He was showing working with your hands. You have to work. You have
mm-hmm.
your golden egg within you. You have the capabilities. None of my sons have any disabilities,
mm-hmm.
physical disabilities. So the thing is, once I had my first child, my dad was like, no, just raise your son. I'm like, I wanted to learn how to build a house. I wanted to do a lot more than just, okay, because at that point I said, okay, well, let's do a daycare. Now, that's a different kind of story. Whatever my dad was going through at the time, because when I went to him, I said, well, I want to do a daycare. And we talked about it. Then when I was ready, he's like, oh, you will be all right. And I'm like, what does that mean? I was so crushed. God rest his soul. My father transitioned. I'll be okay because I'm ready now. I'm like, okay, I have my child now. It's not his fault, but I decided to start a family. But he wanted me to be a conceptual site manager. So I'm at fault, and I hold myself accountable
mm-hmm.
for
mm-hmm.
the fact that my dad said, make a move. He said, all you got to do is wear your hard hat. I was scared. I was scared of the control. You know, he taught me, you know, this is what this is. You
mm-hmm.
wear your hard hat, so you just walk around. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe they're a little bit more nurturing, you know. However, my sons, I have all sons, no daughter, 21, 25
mm-hmm.
now. Today, my little son turned 25 and 27.
Mm-hmm.
It's like literally I find myself, and I was just saying this to Brother L.A. before you called in. I'm like, where's the communication? See, there's a communication divide. His brother Lawton Merritt, he said, if there's a cry, I have to, he was encouraging me to learn my son's language. Learn, men have a language, women have a language. I know a mother's cry. And my sons don't even quite get it. They're like, oh, well, you don't want to wear your mask. And then I'm like, I don't know what y'all did out there, but now I got to have my faith. I don't know, you know, is it that? You know, and then also with the fact that naturally we've been taught to hate one another as a people, stemming from centuries. However, when it comes down to sharing trades and skills passed on from generation to generation, I got some skills. I've passed on some entrepreneurial skills to my son. However, it's time, and I don't see them, first, everything being fast-paced. How to slow them down enough to say, listen to this. You will learn a lot just from listening. And it's not necessarily me. These are people that, first of all, you don't want to listen to somebody who's wealthy or at least well-to-do and got a roof. You know what I'm saying? It's like I have an uncle who I took my now today 25-year-old to his house. He has properties on the west side of Chicago. He said, I didn't know black folk could own stuff like this or something. And I'm like, well, my dad had the building that was paid for in Brownsville. He heard the story. So my uncle just recently reminded my son. And my dad was 21, owning like 3-4 properties, paid for. And he taught my uncle how to play chess. He taught another one of my uncles refrigeration. My dad was like, he was like a do-it-yourself. He would figure out. He was an inventor, too. And I got some inventors, too, y'all. So I engage. I call on my brothers like yourself, Quan. We just met a few weeks ago. You're an entrepreneur. We have a lot in common. To maybe have the conversations with my sons and other young men that I can't necessarily have. I have the vision, the support is there, but it may not necessarily be me who helps them to connect the dots. So that's
right.
That's what I'm saying.
I do feel like that.
You guys get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand that, because we always connect when it's somebody different. I mean, I could speak from experience saying the same thing, like when people around me tried to guide me and say some certain things, I ain't listen, but then when I heard it from somebody else, it hit home, kind of, you know? But it was just like, it was always there, but it was just like, it wasn't kind of until I heard it a couple other times from some other people that I was just like, all right, well, maybe that is what it is.
I don't know. I don't want to say we take our loved ones for granted. And maybe it's veering into that a little bit, taking our loved ones for granted, our caretakers.
It is in a little sense. It is in a
little
sense.
And maybe not the credibility.
A little bit of rebelliousness. Yeah, I think
for my sons, I think they look at me, and I want to have this conversation. Do y'all feel like I'm not credible, even though I've owned a house, but they saw the struggle. They're like, okay, she owned a house. My older son is still to this day pissed off that I never got Section 8 because he didn't like the fact that we had to struggle. Well, I also had a house where I didn't have to have nobody's permission to do my own daycare. I was licensing other people's daycare. So in hindsight,
right.
I'm looking like, okay, all of that woulda, coulda, shoulda. No, I never got on Section 8. I qualify now because I'm just about a senior. However, you can get Section 8 if that's what you want. I want to have those conversations. Let's do what we can do now. So today, I'm going to go get our stuff. So we can sell some snow cones. It's hot enough for it and all this and the other. And we're going to see. Because they don't like me going out by myself. You know, my sons are my bodyguard. So they want to go to the show, but first things first. We're going to get out there, and I guess as it cools off during the night and people stop buying the snow cones and it's out of cool, maybe we can go to the show then, or maybe take a 2-hour break and then get back out there. Because the thing is, work hard now and relax later. So I'm going to follow through with what I see that's on, especially my oldest son's heart. Because like we were supposed to do this. Like, I got one of those carts. I was like, pimp my cart. I got a cart. I put, you know, the cart, grocery cart. And I've had one of those ride-on bikes with the basket. Well, I had an uncle who sold that. But then I got a van. That's my candy store on wheels. That's my mobile office. All of my vehicles have been my mobile office. So, I'll give you guys an update.
I was just going to say, not even to interject, but I just feel like all the kids are just spoiled. including myself. Like, I was spoiled. I mean, I was taught how to work for stuff, too, but I still was spoiled. So it was just like I was a little bit more or less responsible because of that. Like, I was always just used to it being taken care of, you know?
Yeah, because so even if you didn't do it,
I really didn't adapt that type of mindset or activity until I was, like, 21, 22. But before then, it was, like, even still after that, like, I understood that, like, all right, I'm a grown, I'm an adult now. I got to figure this stuff out. But still, a lot of it still was just, like, new to me. I don't feel like we are preparing our children for the real world. And we already know we're going to feel like we're grown by 18 and want to get out the house. We don't even be prepared for the world.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what a lot of it be like. Even going to college and I'm watching other kids, like they got their car paid for. They not worried. I'm struggling just to pay my rent to stay at school. You know what I'm saying? And I'm a star athlete. Like, you know what I'm saying? With this real life stuff that's going on. So I made it happen. But I'm just saying, like, it's like too many stories that's like that. So I started to feel a way like, wow, these white, I'm talking about, it ain't just one. It ain't just one. The majority of them driving the new cars, that year's car. They don't pay their car note. They mom them paying their car note. Just like overly spoiled. But at the same time, that's giving them an advantage too. Because they have less things to worry about. They could really focus on what they need to focus on. And then when they get done, they get to stay at home until they save up to buy a house. Like, I don't know too many black people that's doing that.
Right.
So it'd be like, you know, it's like we fighting an uphill battle on all angles. So I don't get mad at none of that. I just understand what's going on and try to apply something different. Hope that we get a different result because it's kind of like
one example that on a critical mass basis that culturally that black people can learn from, and they're right here in the United States, would be the Amish and Mennonite community. The Amish go to school, they go to academic school, grades 1 through 8. That's it, grades 1 through 8, where everybody else typically goes to school grades 1 through 12. Now, here's the difference. Now, you have quite a few Amish families that are financially independent. There's a number of them that make $1 million to $5 million plus a year. That's from the family business. So what's happening in that community that's not happening in the black community on a critical mass basis, and even white community, because most white people are definitely not Amish or Mennonite. Well, number one, the Amish live to a high degree off the grid, meaning that they don't really participate to a high degree in the banking system. Like, for instance, a lot of their family, first thing, many Amish families and Mennonite families, not all, but many, have a family-based business. That's number one. When you have a family-based business, you can have various profit centers. And I'll give an example. Matter of fact, let me use a Korean family or a Vietnamese family. Let's say you got a Korean family or Vietnamese family that own a Chinese food carryout in a black neighborhood. Anywhere in the United States. All right. First thing, the average Chinese food carryout in the United States takes in about $1.1 million a year. Now, how do they do that? How do they do that in a black neighborhood? Well, if you here's a good exercise for financial literacy. If you look at a Chinese food restaurant. Matter of fact, do you guys have a restaurant? I mean, not a restaurant, but a menu, any kind of a menu near you in your house, you pull it out, you can see. If you count up the number of items on that menu, okay, The items like on the Chinese food restaurant where I typically order out of once a month. The lowest thing costs 49 cents. The highest thing might cost $15. But they've got over 200, practically 300 items on that to order from. So the typical black family, or and even white one, they only have, like, if you got mom and, all right, mom and, let's say you got a mom and dad in the house. So dad's got two jobs and mom's got two jobs. That's only four paychecks. Whereas with this Korean family, with the Chinese food restaurant, where you got the you got three generations working in there in the family business, they've got they get over possibly over 200 to 300 paychecks a day. I gave this example yesterday. I have a house in Washington, D.C. D.C. used to be Chocolate City. It's no longer Chocolate City. It used to be over 70% black when I was coming up. Now it's like 46% black and shrinking. My new neighbors in Washington, D.C., the family that sold in my house was a black family where the matriarch is 101 years old. Her two kids sold it and got over $500,000 in cash for it. They killed the golden goose. That was their gold goose. Now, the family that bought it are Asian. They own a nail salon. So, and a nail salon is a gaggle of geese, because if you got five or six, I don't know how many nail techs they have in there, they had $500,000 cash to buy the house. Because that family business, that nail salon was their golden goose, were able to, you know, to buy another one and they can keep on going. Whereas the family, the black family that killed their goose, because one of the family members I found out already, on their house, they spent $10,000 plus for a new deck. And see, they've got a couple of kids. So when she transitions, more than likely, those kids are going to sell that house. They're going to kill another goose, which means their kids, their grandkids, and great-grandkids, they got to start all over again from scratch.
We got to get our people from thinking about the quick dollar and think about the long term. I think that's where the disconnect comes from. They show everything. That's more or less what I was speaking earlier about. Like, everything is fast-paced with everything in our generation, but it's to make us, you know, reactors instead of us thinking about it logically and then making a decision. Like, everything moving fast, so you don't have no time to think or process about nothing. You just reacting.
Right.
So
and
now that everybody's just reacting.
Right.
We
can learn, you know, there are people out here that make $25,000 a day. There are people out here that make $100,000 a day, legally. But it comes from learned skills. Once again, we're all putting everybody even. A lot of times we talk about inequality. We're all born not knowing anything. We don't have any skills. The only skill that we have when we come out of our mother's bodies, the only skill, we got two skills, how to cry and how to shit on ourselves. That's it. The walking, the talking, the learning how to eat, the learning how to drink, the learning how to go to the bathroom, learn how to – all that – these are acquired skills. They're required. So if one person can learn how to make $25,000 a day, if another person can learn how to earn six or seven figures a day, if another person can, because the new family, my next door new neighbors in D.C., okay, they have the cash where you can learn about a house that's for sale today and you can go to settlement by Friday. That is an acquired skill that anybody can learn, because we all come on this planet, we don't know nothing. Everything that we have to learn LeBron James didn't come out of his mother's womb learn how to play basketball. His skill level, he had to learn how to play basketball. Somebody had to teach him how to play basketball. Then he just kept on working on it himself. It's an acquired skill. Bill Gates that he has, it's an acquired skill. Mark Zuckerberg, with Facebook is a glorified faceplate. It's an acquired skill. Everything is an acquired skill. Everything. And anybody can learn. And everybody has at least one golden goose that they can turn in to meet any kind of situation that they need to learn.
I think that was a perfect example, too. Like, every that's a great lesson to learn from. I mean, even in my life personally, like, I can reflect and look back at how a lot of things happened even for me. And it was just like that. It was the same way. So it was like I could have quit and I could have gave up, but it was that resiliency in me to keep fighting and to keep believing in me and what I wanted to do and what I set forth to do that allowed me to be able to get to where I was at today or where I am at today and continuing to go. And the part of that, like, I always sit back and I think because I'm just like, you know, I come from the south side of Chicago, too, and I've done all of the things that I was able to do. But I always look back and I wonder, like, man, why couldn't my brothers do it, you know? And that bothers me a lot because I'm just like, you know, I may have had other opportunities that was presented to me, but I don't want to think that they had no opportunities available to them. And this the confliction of that kind of conflicts with me sometimes, and I think that's why I do so much for the community and for the youth, because I feel accountable about it. Like, you know, I made it out, but I'm from where you're from, so I get it. You know, I went through the same type of things. I just was able to overcome it because I had different opportunities that was presented in front of me that I was allowed to utilize. But then it's what about the ones that don't, you know? Like, do I get to a place where I just be like, oh, well, they had a choice too. They had an opportunity too. But what if they really didn't have an opportunity? You know, I talk to a lot of the kids out here on the street that be hanging out. I'm like, I ask them, like, why y'all hanging out here? And like 9 out of 10 times, they say they want to be doing something else. Mm-hmm. They just don't have the opportunity to. And that's really what break my heart. Like, that's how I felt as a kid coming up, you know. I just was able to use basketball to get a scholarship and do some other things and get out of this. But financially, my mom and them didn't really have it to do that for me. So had
I we got something in common, because I got a scholarship out of high school to go to. That's how I got through college, with a basketball scholarship.
Yeah, I was the same way. I played semi-professionally and professionally overseas as well. And then now I own a production company and a radio show. And I work part-time as well. I act, I do motivational speaking, skits, all types of things. I'm very active on social media. But
Now, what high school did you go to? You went to high school in Chicago?
Yeah, I went to Gage Park.
Okay. All right, I had a teammate of mine. He's an assistant coach with the Chicago Bulls right now. He graduated from DeSable.
Mm-hmm.
Up in Chicago, and we played 2 years against him down in Texas. But now he's an assistant coach with the Chicago Bulls, but he came right out of Chicago like you.
Yeah. And, I mean, we all around. I just feel like everybody don't get the same opportunity, but I just feel like I don't like the narrative where it's just like either you got to play ball, rap, or sell drugs to get out, because that's not
well,
true.
Let me run this past you, ball player. Well, I'm a former ball player. Like, you went a little bit further than me. I just, you know, just went the 4 year route. I didn't do anything after that. One of my, and here's what I would like to do also. One of the people that I really admire, he's a polarizing figure in basketball circles, LeVar Ball. But the reason why I like LeVar Ball is, number one, I believe that even on a high school level, We need to start teaching these kids about intellectual property and how we can start making, manufacturing our own shoes, our own sports equipment, because the people in China that make the shoes, that make the jerseys, they're earning more than LeBron James. Nobody talks about it, but they do. So I would like to see more ball players. You don't even have to be a ball player, but get into sports manufacturing, making our own, you know, sports equipment. It could be football, basketball, baseball,
Kyrie Irving was very active
and all that.
About
what are your thoughts on that?
I said Kyrie Irving was very active about the same thing, but they just going to, you know, even with Ice Cube trying to start the big three, they're going to give you a hard time, you know. And you're going to have to play ball with them in order to use their venues, unless you're going to build your own venues, and they're going to make it hard for you to get
into
other venues.
Now, you just said something. We need to start building our own venues.
We need to start building our own everything like we used to before. I think that was the trick in the trade to get us away from that. And one of the things, I agree with you, we're not getting on Section 8. That's not the move. That's not what we're doing. That was the whole trick in the trade that was offered to everybody to trade in their gold, their golden egg, essentially. Because, like you said, we all had a golden egg before, but it was traded in for that. And you don't gain anything from that. If you make a certain amount, they take you off. So it was just like all of that, taking any type of aid is where you develop that laziness. And that's what, you know, that's what it was. So it was like, even doing my research, like, a lot of black people was Republicans before aid came in. That's when everybody started switching to Democrats.
Right.
So it was just like, you know, when you do your research on all this stuff, it makes a lot of sense. And it's pretty much in front of you. You can't argue with the truth.
So right. Well, like, there were a number of, and there's one of them that's right out of Chicago area that Reba turned me on to, but early on, most black folks were Republicans, and during when we were predominantly Republicans, we were building townships, Bronzeville.
We were doing too much.
That was one of them.
That was the whole trick.
Yeah, that was one of them.
It was like what y'all touched on, just like why they built the highways. All of that is intentional because they understood they moving. And they not playing. And we can't compete with the level of things that they can do. We just can't. If we look at anything that we do whenever we include them, we dominate them.
Mm-hmm.
On every aspect. They can't let us do anything because they can't compete with us. We only compete with each other. They can't do
nothing
with us.
You're on the right move. Because if you own a venue, if you own venue, it doesn't matter who's playing who the sports contest is about. You're winning because you're winning at the gate. You're receiving ticket sales. You got the concessionary sales and all that. People can look this up online. If you look at any venue, you know, the Staples Center out there in L.A. What do you have up there in Chicago? You got Soldiers Field. Where do the Bulls play in Chicago?
United Center.
Look up on Wikipedia how much the Staples Center takes in as far as revenue up in Chicago. I mean, they're taking their money on the concerts, whatever kind of events, the flower show, the auto show, you know, the Bulls games. Do they play soccer in there too? I mean, not soccer, but
no, they play the Blackhawks game in the United Center too.
Yeah, so, I mean, now we might not have the bank. Well, you know what? The actual money is already in the black community. We just have to catch up. We got to elevate our thinking to that level. But there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of gold. There's a lot of geese out there. We just
Since you've mentioned LeBron James several times, I try to do what I encourage my son, especially my older son, who actually met LeBron James when he was in grammar school. He was so inspired by LeBron James. And my dad would have me connect the dots myself. Key people, reach out to them with an innovative idea or something that would spark their interest to say, hey, you know, you inspire me, and this is what I'm doing. How can I get this person to back me up on what I'm doing? Even if not so, you still have that name to use as leverage to say, hey. And people, even just connecting your name to someone of prestige, it makes a difference. So my oldest son, actually, you know, he wants to go for the NBA. He's an amazing athlete. All three of my sons are. But coming out of high school and going into college, the HBCU he went to, they didn't have a team or the team wasn't all that, nevertheless. I said, well, start your own team. And I caution him, not necessarily. A lot of times people do different programs or whatever, and they're living out their dreams through the children. Well, not to burn young people out. I've seen that happen to adults trying to live out their dreams through younger children and actually alleviating or disregarding those desires, those personal desires and dreams. You just want to be a support. You don't have to necessarily connect yourself to everybody's personal agenda, but at least I'm working with you in the way that I can work with you. Let's say you don't want to, let's say you want to be an entrepreneur. You want to sell your cupcakes at my event when you do the 3-on-3 and when you do the summer basketball program. Because actually, I'm inspired. I'm going to go ahead and do it. Since my son was also talking about the going out to the park, you know, selling our products, the cold drinks and things like that. We're going to do what you guys, this conversation inspired, well, it sparked an interest to just go ahead and bring it fully through. It doesn't have to be my son. I could do it. I'm sure he'd get involved once he sees, because I was a great athlete, and at one point I could hit some three-pointers too. I'm short, by the way. But the thing is, I mean, I was able to move on that court. You know, I'm stubborn. I'm challenged. I was athletic, and surprised my sons at one point that I could move on the court like that. Obviously didn't have a good handle on the ball that I wanted to have. My son, he was able to get in. He can run like a cheetah. He used to call himself a cheetah. Nevertheless, let them take it over. You're going to see, because I don't want to necessarily have to reach outside the family, but I will. Let's do it. I'm still, my goal is to inspire you to success, inspire you to prosperity, and that's all it is. No, you know, your family is not always the one, not going to always be the one to help you to get to where you want to be. But at least I can say I put forth that best foot. You know,
right.
So I don't want to cry over spilled milk because I didn't get on Section 8 and I didn't do this and I gave money to children who made the honor roll. I was trying to fire my own son, but, hey,
no,
you didn't make the honor roll. That's why
you
didn't get
right
the money.
You did all the right things, and it's going to come back to you tenfold. I think that's the best thing about doing it. Like, you know, we natural.
This is a time.
Yeah,
we are
natural
right
helpers to each other. Only thing is, you know, with everything that's going on, the culture just being changed, and there ain't no narrative because we ain't creating our narrative. We letting our narrative be created for us, and I think that's the biggest thing. That's one of the biggest things that I focus on trying to change is the narrative.
Well, something that you said, Brother Quan, you said we can't compete. As an educator, I, especially like you teach a Spanish, well, I can't do this. Can you roll my R's? Let's eliminate the word can't, because we are capable. We just have to know how. We can. They can't compete.
It all depends on the market. It all depends on the market that you're going after.
Yeah. What I was saying is, no matter what they do with us, they can't compete. Like, you know, we coming from the worst.
Oh, you were saying the opposite
odds,
way. I got you. I thought you were saying that we can't compete with them.
I got you.
Yeah.
No, what I'm saying is they can't compete with us. They can't compete with nothing that we do. That's the whole reason why they don't want to be in no lane with us. They don't want to do business with us because we do business better than them.
True.
We create things, but they don't create anything. They steal ideas.
We still ain't found none of them people.
That's
cool.
Right. Yeah.
And that's just
so,
the reality
of it. I apologize. I'm clean and I actually
every ethnicity can show something that they've created and brought to the world or brought to the culture or to the people in a universal wave or whether it's culturally or locally, but them.
Okay.
Other than business, other than the level of hierarchy and business, they haven't taught us anything.
Right.
Or shown us anything but how to be hateful or how to be malicious or that's the only thing.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
So no contribution to society, worst conditions,
and then expect the best out of us. And if you ain't given the best, then you look down upon. And that's not cool to nobody.
Interesting.
You wouldn't lock a dog in a cage and not feed it, and then get mad if it bites you and say that that dog is a cruel dog that needs to go down.
And what
who's
the thing
really
is,
the
initially
cruel?
They stole our lands from us. They stole much from us, and then they
that's
said,
why,
and so
I
don't.
That.
I think
who's
a part
really
of it was our trusting spirit as a people. You know, we're
are
giving,
we're
natural givers, the nurturer. Pardon?
Mm-hmm. I said that's what I was saying earlier. Like we're naturally givers. Are they the animals, or are we the animals? They trying to make us into who they are. We're not
but
who they
we
are.
Were,
we've never been who they are.
We allowed them into our circles and. By stealing or being codependent, because keep in mind, we're learning that all of our ancestors were not enslaved, a good number.
Yeah,
they were
just nice.
White slaves, too. Yeah. So
they
infiltrated
nice.
And came in to take over what we had, put their names on our stuff, and then say, okay, this is the law. The law says no. And I agree with my sons and other generations. Like, wait a minute, because
yeah,
I'm not you. I've been a political prisoner, Quan. You just did something you don't know about me. They arrested me for doing something right. So how is it that you get to arrest me and that's legal? Whose law is this?
Good.
I was a so-called law-abiding citizen, volunteering in the school, and when I got to the courthouse, the judge said, how dare you? Coming because my attorney got there before I did. And
I got
to
you one
him.
Even better.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, I got you one even better, just how corrupt the system is. Like, I had custody of my son since he was born. My baby's mother was giving him up for adoption when he was born. I intervened.
You still have custody?
Once I, nah, so that's what I'm getting into.
Interesting. Okay.
So, you know, I kept him for up to 9 years. 2 years ago, my baby mother showed up to my other baby mama's house where my son was there with the police and claimed that that's her child. He's not supposed to be there. This, that, and the third, and all my son was doing was visiting his brother. She knew that. It was very intentional. But just through that, she was able to take my child away from me. Don't know him from a can of paint, never been around. She just knows that I'm making some money now, and if she get her child back, she can get child support. And
No. Well, you met me now, so we're going to circumvent that.
Yeah.
They ain't put me in jail for nothing. Matter of fact, they had to release me. There's a lot of situations like that.
I was incarcerated the same way, and I didn't do anything wrong, you know what I'm saying? But that's just how the system works, you know what I'm saying? She put out an Amber Alert saying that I stole my child when I have legal documentation on him.
And that's the sad thing. Now, you got to go back and prove that everything you did was right.
And they still illegally came into my home and took my child, and I was viral. I had over 1 million views on Facebook and Instagram. It was crazy.
Interesting.
But
need our own law system, because that's a just us system. Now, we're not the us. Just us system. Just us. Just ICE, cold-blooded, dirty. Doesn't work for us, only works
for
them.
Well, you can get that. You can do that by forming your own town. I've been in some towns.
Exactly. We don't need to be integrated.
There are a number of black towns in this country where the mayor, the city council, the law, it's all black people.
Black people.
They make the rules
in that
community.
There's a lot of those in Atlanta, too. Yep, there's a lot of them in Atlanta. A lot of the business owners just collaborating and doing that. But I feel like this is the only place where, I mean, I feel like Chicago was under the Al Capone era for so long where it was just shiesty, snaky business. And that's what stopped a lot of people from really flourishing and really getting to where they're supposed to go together, because it's just how business go in general, you know?
Well, I want to encourage you by you taking care of that child for that many years. See, I will get my law degree, but right now we're going to mitigate and litigate, and I will show you how to, as Brother L.A. and I have been discussing, do the math. We hire attorneys and same other for people to. My dad represented himself when his property was stolen. And keep in mind, then they get to come and put handcuffs on you because you don't have your guards around you. They don't do that to the Muslim community. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-mm, they don't. They don't.
They're
they came
right
to my house, they handcuffed me, chased my son around, took him out with no shoes on, no shirt on. He was just in his shorts. We had just woke
like
up
animals.
And he was eating
yeah.
cereal.
So that those yeah. years that you took care of your son, she owes you. So
yeah,
let's look at the
50,000. She's 50,000 in debt and child support to me, and I'm still paying child support to her at this moment.
You shouldn't
right
have
now.
To do that. And keep in mind now, we're talking about that audio that you shared, Brother L.A., where was that Neely Fuller? No, it wasn't Neely Fuller. So I did want to acknowledge that was Neely Fuller, that audio, one of those last audios that was shared by Brother L.A. I love Neely Fuller, Dr. Carl Anderson, Dr. Cress Westling, and I didn't know that you had actually spoken with her. You are amazing. We got to do a book on you, Brother L.A. But he said we tend to – that last audio that you shared, Brother L.A.
You talking about Nine Friends?
No, not that one.
Art of War with Umar Johnson?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I heard one with Dr. Umar. I know the beginning when I first came
yeah,
on.
Yeah, Art of War
Dr.
with
Umar
Johnson. And then the Neely Fuller thing is the people getting together on weekends about build houses, shotgun houses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It had to be Dr. Umar Johnson. I apologize.
What?
All right, that was the Art of War. Okay.
Yeah, because that was another one of the things I wanted to ask for. Like, what is it that we can do to start? You know, I know it's some programs that's like that in certain cities and in certain other things. But I just think, like, that's one of the things that really, really we need to implement back in the community. Like, only thing that I know for sure that I can say is I know a lot of people is planting more gardens and getting more into the agricultural part. But I just think it needs to be on all parts. And we need to figure out a way to try to sustain some of
well,
those
Well, the lady that Reba had on yesterday, I think that would be a good fit because that would give us some traction boots on the ground right there in Chicago. I mean, because she's already out
yeah.
there. She's been out there
yeah.
for 10 years. Reba, what was that lady's name?
Evelyn Johnson. We call her Mamas and
yeah.
Babas in the village. We say Mama Evelyn, Mama Reba. Baba Kwan, Baba L.A.
Mm.
So Mama Evelyn, as I affectionately call her. So, yeah, she's reclaiming our youth day of July 30th, and she's been doing this for 10 years in memory to keep children off the streets, to encourage entrepreneurship. She's been doing this
yeah,
event where the young people come out and put out tables, and they make mm-hmm. money. If adults come out, then they will just pick a youth and or have a youth mm-hmm. to work with them and pay that youth to help work their table. So they don't have to bring anything but themselves to get food. You know,
hold on a minute, people. I'm going to see if this is the audio y'all were talking about.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
Now, what's that audio you were talking about? Was that the audio you guys were talking about? Hello, hello.
I'm here still. I got to
check. Yeah. Was that the audio? If it wasn't that one, it was Nine Friends, I guess.
I've been a fan of Dr. Umar Johnson for maybe about 10, 12 years now. I heard him speak in Chicago a long time ago, and at the time, I thought that man was crazy. I'm not going to lie to you. When I was first hearing Dr. Umar speak, he was talking about black men and dresses and all just some outlandish stuff at the time. All right. So looking at where we're at today, he looked like Nostradamus to me. Because I'm just like, how did he know that this was, you feel me? But in real life, Dr. Umar knows what he's talking about.
Did you ever get a chance to listen to, Steve Coakley?
Reba
might know
about.
Reba, you there? Reba's off somewhere. Steve Coakley, he was another guy out of Chicago. I think he transitioned. He passed over. But Steve Coakley had they probably got some videos of Steve Coakley on the internet. But, let's take a call here. Huh?
What was he known for?
Steve Coakley, he gave some lectures on the Boule.
Okay.
And other topics as well. But I met him once in D.C. when I got some, I bought a cassette tape off of him outside of D.C. in Silver Spring, Maryland, but he died several years ago.
I apologize, you guys, my other line.
Reba, have you ever heard of, did you ever listen to or meet Steve Coakley?
No, I do know the name. Well, well, through my dad, yeah. My other son is on the line. Happy 25th birthday, BJ.
Happy birthday.
Thanks, Ma. Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thank y'all, man. Appreciate it, man.
So you're live on the air with Brother L.A., Generational Wealth.
Okay.
Brother. And Brother Quan, who's a producer. As a matter of fact, you need to check out his videos as well.
Now,
so I'm
Quan, before we go to our next caller. Quan, before we go to our next caller, tell us more about what you do, and then how can we get in touch or get your works?
Well, essentially, by trade, I'm a videographer. I have a production company called Quanta Down Productions. I also have a talk radio show that's on Roku called Talk of the Shy. You can get a hold of me on all social media platforms, either at Quanta Down or Talk of the Shy. That's my name on all my personal pages. It's Quanta Down, but my show page is Talk of the Shy. My production page is Quan the Don Productions, LLC. And I have work on all of those pages, but you can contact me or get a hold of me on any of those pages that I just named right there.
Okay. Now, you see your video, you do documentaries, anything like that?
I do all of those. I got a movie out on Roku right now called Good Kid, Mad City. It's starring a local nine-year-old rapper out of the city of Chicago named C.T. Morris Middleton,
nice title.
Dwayne Wade's nephew. Bye-bye. And it's basically about these two kids that's growing up in Chicago and just showing the different choices that they have to make as youth coming up in the hard streets of Chicago. And just, you know, we always see movies from an adult perspective, but we never really see it from a child's perspective. And
right.
That's really one of the things that we
well,
that
speaking
we really
of that,
want to show.
Are you familiar with his street name was Yummy?
Yeah,
with him?
I'm very familiar with Yummy. Yeah, I'm very familiar
okay.
with Yummy.
Okay, has anybody done a documentary about his life?
Yes, there's plenty of documentaries of Yummy on YouTube. People can
okay.
go there and check up on his story. But Yummy was just another unfortunate. I mean, Yummy could have been any of us. Yummy could have been me. Like, to be honest, I just thank God for the people that was placed in my life. And that's why I'm so grateful a lot of the times, because it was those type of people that was in my life that could have sent me off because I was young and dumb, you know. But instead, they
And you were
they
actually from
a,
Gage Park High School, Brother Quan. I did a lot
yeah,
of my
I'm
community
from,
work
I'm,
in the Gage Park area. Minister Hood
yeah, so,
is one of my close friends. Mama Hood.
Yep. Yep.
Andrea Hood,
so,
I knew you knew her.
Yeah.
And so you went to high
yeah,
school Carlicia with
Carlicia.
That's my
Carlicia and Ink. Yeah. So I used to manage Ink Dog. But yeah, I went to school with Carlicia. And, you know, yeah, I know Mama Hood as well. I'm very
yeah.
familiar with her.
Well, Reba,
let me ask
you this. Reba, hold on, Cora. Reba, let me
yeah.
ask you this. Now, you raised three sons.
Mm-hmm.
How did you prevent? Because Yummy went out at 11 years old. How did you how did you raise your kids to get to their age? Because, I mean, Yummy, he was going at 11. How did you do it with three of them?
Yeah, you know, I do know a lot of young people are forced into gangs and so forth. In my son's case, because I kept them active, and I kept them so active to the point where, you know, from the athletic programs to community programs, I kept them active enough to be able to make the choice, make the choice to not go in that direction. Although, what they called, somebody jumped, one of my three jumped off the porch, and one of my other sons followed to actually keep an eye out on them. So that's what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
That's what was shared, and I received that. I have to go with what he shared. So it's not to the point where they were out there just trying to be ruthless. It's just the fact that I know in my neighborhood, I was trying to get the parents engaged and so forth. I was working in not only the Bogan community, but also the Gage Park community consecutively.
Mm-hmm.
I kid you not. I would say interchangeably because, you know, right next door to each other. Keeping my sons active still did not keep them from having to face the ills of the inner city with children that are unparented. unparented. That's a real word. Neglected, abused, angry. You know, keep in mind, parents didn't give their children these guns. They were planted. And some of these shootings were not the ops. I know it was the cops. It wasn't the ops, it was the cops in many cases. So it was a trickery. They were tricked into thinking that, oh, the ops got such, such. And, you know, somebody told me, it was somebody on one of the podcasts we were talking. They said, no, there's nobody running around, no white men running around with masks on, with afros. Yes, they are. And though some of those SUVs, they have tinted windows. So
that's
keep that. And I got a situation where
my
parent leaders in your
they're
community.
They're not supposed to have on my cars.
They're not. And then those SUVs blended in with the, because it was an SUV popularity thing. You know, I never wanted one. I got me a pickup truck so we can make some money.
Well, let me ask you this.
But
y'all bringing
they
that
did
up.
Not completely
have any of you two seen the, have any of you two seen the TV show Snowfall?
Yes.
No, I don't know.
All right, Snowfall, all right, you have a drug supplier. The drug supplier is coming in through a CIA operative.
Informant.
Right, which if people look up the backstory on what Snowfall is based on, it was based on a lot of – exactly. It's all on YouTube.
It's based on the real
story. So yeah, what's your take on Snowfall – And related to like what's been going on in Chicago and other cities like Chicago?
I can really contest to everything that she's talking about from personal experience. You know, my mother She did the best that she could. She kept us in church. She tried to keep me as busy as possible. I used to be in boxing, basketball, all that stuff. But it don't change when we outside away from y'all, because we around them. And that's the big difference. You know what I'm saying? Like, had I had my cousins there in school, it probably would have been a different choice. But I didn't have that. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you got to protect yourself. It's like jail. When you come to school, you in a whole different environment. You're not, it's nobody to really protect you. You got to protect yourself. So at the end of the day, if you got a clique of people that's chasing you or, you know, starting stuff with you just because you're not what they is, you know, eventually you conform to that. And that's what a lot of the kids is subjected to. You know what I'm saying? They don't want to gang bang, but they don't want to get beat up every day because they don't gang bang either. They don't want to get their money took or picked on just because they walking down the street and they not doing, you know what I'm saying? So most of the kids join the gang for protection. That's how they trick us into joining the gang.
In the case of my son, who jumped off the porch, Brother Quan, I think he had friends at one point. I think he just went and found for friends and just found the wrong one.
It don't even be that.
I laugh out of pain, you know. It's not funny, but it's like, wow.
Yeah. But no, it don't even be that. It just be where you live at. It's so many different factors and conditions.
He chose his friends. I'm just told in this case it was slightly different because he wasn't forced into a gang. He was not forced into a gang. No. He was just out there ripping and running, what they say, boy stuff. But it was just, imagine, I thought when I dropped him off at the park, dude, I'm thinking they playing ball. So me later, after my sons were 18 and up, we were sneaking away. Right.
Reba, hold on. Reba, hold on. I got another caller here, 314. 314, your mic is open.
Okay.
Oh, hold on. I think his mic is his mic open, 314?
Maybe they need to star one, open up the mic.
No, hold it. Three.
To the host
I thought I unmuted him. Wait a minute. Doggone, I'm trying again. 314, your mic is open, I hope.
From 10:15, I thought I dialed in on a conference call. Are you on a conference call? Or a show?
Well, right now, we're just out there.
That's an expensive conference call. The show costs
no conference call. No, we don't use that on here.
Oh, I thought y'all was talking to each other on three with him, Gisella, and you.
Mm-mm. No.
It would have been less expensive if it was.
No conference call. But
once and you closed it.
Well, my son did call in, and I was wishing him happy birthday. I clicked over and brought him into the podcast. Yeah.
You know, I think that Umar Johnson is really ridiculous in what he says. It's really, really ridiculous.
Are you talking about overall or that one specific video I played? I mean, audio I played.
Well, that's the only thing. That's the only thing we hear you say. You play on him. So yes, in that particular thing, is it more out there? I think you're ridiculous in getting people to put up $750,000, so they say, to build a school that they never saw plans for.
Now let me give an update on that. I don't follow Umar on the regular, but he did buy two buildings. That's the last I heard about.
Where were they?
He did buy two school buildings. Delaware.
Let me ask you a question.
But they need work.
Yeah, but why are they empty?
Oh, he's got it. All right, from the last I've heard, and once again, I do not keep involved. I mean, I don't keep up with him on a daily. But from what I've heard from him, I mean, on videos, because I don't know him personally like that. And I'm going to see if I can get him on here one day. The two buildings that he got, they were pretty large in size, and they needed work. So he needed HVAC systems and all that. He was asking HVAC professionals and other building trade professionals, could they donate some time and talent or whatever to help get the buildings up and running? That's the last option.
Wait a minute. Well, they public school building.
I don't know what they formally were, but he bought
Montessori. They're going to be Montessori.
All right, here's the question.
Oh, you mean how did he obtain a property?
Around the country.
Give Pianki the floor.
Let him ask this question.
Mm-hmm. And wait a minute. In cities around the country, you got public school buildings that's empty. You can buy them a dime a dozen. The question is, why come they empty? I give you the answer. There's no kids. So you're going to buy a public school building and there's no kids to put in. You're going to take it on privately and try to do something that couldn't be done with public money. That is stupid. Anyway, I'm going to let you go, man. It's time for you to leave. Talk to you later.
All right. Yeah. Well, he brought up a point. If the building, answer that question. If the building, because, all right, I was sent to private schools. Okay, go ahead. Let me chime in real quick. The reason why a lot of people go to private schools, and I attended some private schools, is because they were offering, like, for instance, in high school, I attended a private school. They had a real sound basketball program, DeMatha High School. All right, they had, and a lot of kids who played under Coach Morgan Wooten, he's passed over now, got scholarships to college. So that's why I went to that specific private school. Sir, Quan, your comments on it?
Yeah, I mean, I understand a lot of this. Conversation is multi-layered, and
yeah,
I understand where he's coming from on his angle and opinion about everything as well when it comes to that school and everything. But at any school that starts off with these students, that's not hard when you put it out. Once it's open, you have open enrollment, and people come sign their children up. So that's not the question of where are the students. It's not because there isn't any students. He needs to have a functional building. Or the
right.
team off of the school.
I agree.
He needs to curriculum. He needs to get teachers. He needs to have a board. There's a lot of other things that needs to come into play before you can just create a school. So it's not fair if you don't understand what it even takes to create a school or start that to have an opinion based off that and to judge
and
somebody. It takes a lot to do any business.
I agree. With the curriculum that he's laying out there, from what I've heard, he's offering something that is not going to be offered in a public school. And that's why people will pay him to have their kids go to school there. He'll get the students.
He'll definitely get the students. And the school will be a success. And we'll only see it in the years to come. But one thing that I never do is knock another black man. If that's his dream, they're going to put him through hell and hot water to get it because they know what he's trying to do is going to do to the economy and to the agenda of white supremacy. And we got to stop being such against each other when it comes to that. Even if we don't agree, just agree to disagree. I'm at that point.
Hey, Quan,
because
I got somebody at more, and we're over time. Look, thanks for calling in. I'll see you guys later.
Yes, sir.